Trendstorm.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and Trendstorm. My name is Andrew Kripko, and I'm going to give you a forward-focused analysis of things to come and the general trends behind them. Here's what we have for you today. Afghan anarchy. The failed state keeps failing. The perennially failed state of Afghanistan slipped even further into anarchy after four high-profile attacks by the Taliban and Daesh in the span of only 9 days, making the world wonder just how much worse the war can get. State of the Union. Better or worse? Trump made a strong case during his landmark speech that the State of the Union has been better under the past year of his presidency than at any other time in recent memory, though his Democrat detractors say that it's never been more divided. And also, US-EU trade war. Old allies, new rivals? The imposition of new America First tariffs and Trump's remarks about having a lot of problems with the EU's trade policy have made people worry that these two allies might soon enter into a trade war. Opening up this edition of Trendstorm is the deteriorating security situation in Afghanistan. The perennially failed state of Afghanistan slipped even further into anarchy after four high-profile attacks by the Taliban and Daesh in the span of only 9 days, making the world wonder just how much worse the war can get. Trump promised to win the war and authorized the dispatch of 4,000 additional troops to the landlocked nation, with 1,000 of them reportedly getting ready for deployment by this spring in order to advise and assist their Afghan counterparts. This announcement hasn't deterred the Taliban or Daesh, both of whom are designated as terrorist groups by Russia, from carrying out more attacks, as they almost seem determined to taunt the U.S., judging by their spree of attacks over the past 2 weeks. The Taliban claimed responsibility for besieging Kabul's Intercontinental Hotel and exploding an ambulance bomb in the capital that claimed over 100 lives, while Daesh killed workers from the Save the Children NGO in Jalalabad and recently stormed the Kabul Military Academy. Afghans have been shocked by the audacity of these attacks, all of which seem designed to send the message that nobody is safe in the country, no matter where they are, potentially contributing to the population's ever-growing distrust of their government, and therefore undermining the U.S.'s war efforts. As is usually the case whenever these attacks occur, the Afghan authorities predictably blame Pakistan for allegedly being behind them. And the U.S. carried out a drone strike against the country in the aftermath of one of these incidences. Islamabad, for its part, vehemently denies any complicity in these events and blasted its critics for failing to provide even a single shred of evidence backing up their claims. Moreover, Pakistan reminded the world that it has cleansed its border region of terrorists, but that Afghan refugees nevertheless pose serious security risks and should therefore be repatriated. Looking beyond the immediate aftermath of what happened, a glimmer of hope has appeared on the horizon in the form of the Tashkent Conference that's prospectively slated to take place in March to revive the Afghan peace process. Similar initiatives have taken place before, such as last year's three gatherings in Moscow, but no serious progress has yet been made in saving Afghanistan from becoming an even worse failed state than it already is. Folks, what happened in Afghanistan over the past 2 weeks is tragic, and we're joined by two Pakistani experts this week to tell us more about it. The first one in our program today is Mr. Waqas Mahmood Dolgar. He's a Pakistani political commentator who writes for The Nation newspaper.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Waqas, the traditional spring fighting season hasn't even begun yet, though Afghanistan is already drenched in blood. So what does this presage for the coming year, especially given the upcoming deployment of more U.S. troops to the country and their newly assertive guidelines for engaging with the enemy?
Afghanistan has now officially become the longest ever war fought by the U.S. despite the drawdown of the U.S.-led NATO forces in Afghanistan after a span of war covering 16 years. The situation in Afghanistan has not per se witnessed the establishment of a state of state over the war ravaged country haunted by political turmoil and instability, nor has Pakistan received accolades or respect. The fragility of the situation has added to the woes of Afghan public, who see no ending to interventions of NATO or US-led NATO. However, an ever-increasing aggressive U.S. turn was witnessed as for the first time, all six Afghan military corps have engaged in offensive operations. As per U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff Joseph Dunford, the strategy was developed to support President Trump's line of policy, adopted to expand the advisory role to tactical level. So, interestingly, Trump's State of the Union address did not address the Afghan region, but specifically the U.S. Defense Secretary Mattis admitted that Taliban militants continue to try to seize provincial or district centers, but he insisted that they have been generally forced into decentralized small-scale ambushes. At the same time, Mattis maintained that there's a disarray among various enemy groups in Afghanistan that has led to a situation where it's limited Taliban resources, movement, and ability to conduct major offenses. So actually, the U.S. has spent well over $800 billion fighting the Afghanistan conflict, and there have been more than 2,000 U.S. military fatalities. And furthermore, the U.S. $700 billion National Defense Authorization Act passed by U.S. Senate includes $60 billion for war coalition support, including Afghanistan. So both U.S. and Pakistan have huge stakes in Afghanistan. Pakistan, just like everyone else in the region, assumes that eventually U.S. troops will have to leave the region, which will lead to rise in rampant destabilization and civil war in Afghanistan. According to a BBC study, the Taliban militants are active on 70% of Afghan territory. Taliban fully controls 14 districts and have an active and open physical presence under the 2623. The BBC investigation revealed that the number of districts under Taliban rule has increased since the massive withdrawal mission carried out by the U.S.-led forces. Even Daesh has presence in northern and eastern parts, but does not fully control any districts. So in view of recent attacks, Trump has rejected any possibility of negotiations with Taliban after the attempt to intensify and rapidly increase American presence in order to reach political settlements, but such endeavor has always failed. So I believe during the eras of Bush and Obama, admit the Afghanistan policy was mainly construed as part of South Asia. However, in his book, Indispensable Nation, Wali Nasser wrote regarding the importance of Pakistan in context of Afghanistan through lens of Richard Holbrooke, who worked as special advisor to Obama in South Asia. Nasser stressed that Holbrooke coined the term AFPAC in recognition of the fact that Pakistan's insistence that peace will remain elusive in South Asia until and unless South Asia is freed from the militaristic status quo, which is enhanced by the militarism of pro-Israeli NATO. The result of Holbrooke's efforts was that it reduced American reliance on military doctrines. That approach is need of the hour.
Okay, well, what I'd like to ask you then, Waqas, is in your answer, you touched upon how this violence is adding to the woes of the Afghan people, as you put it, and this was a very relevant comment to make because I was reading a Wall Street Journal report the other day, and they said that some Afghans have actually begun to blame their own government for the latest spree of attacks, alleging that it's incapable of providing security for them and therefore failing in its responsibilities to the people. So, Waqas, what's your response to this, and what implications could the report have if it's true?
In that context, the Afghan civil society has furiously reacted in anger as to why the Afghan government is unable to protect Kabul, the capital city, which is heavily militarized with checkpoints and barriers at every roundabout, and how is that insurgents strike at will. Afghan officials said that they expected urban attacks to escalate after the U.S. president announced to increase pressure on Pakistan. However, the political commentators say that political disarray in Kabul has exacerbated the security situation. The government is facing a growing and vocal opposition and has been long strained by a constitutional crisis. Mr. Ghani has struggled to manage picking what most critics would term as untimely battles. The Afghan intelligence chief, Masoom Stanikzai, is facing calls to resign and to lessen the criticism. He has sought to blame foreign involvement. So as U.S. has increased its magnitude of attacks on the Taliban, which involves the 4,000 bombs dropped as part of U.S. air campaign, the commander of known state actors have resorted to respond. So Amrullah Saleh, a former intel chief who briefly advised Mr. Ghani in security reforms, he said that the Afghan president is micromanaging, being involved in chairing water councils and holding weekly meetings on procurement contracts when he should be focused entirely on security and unity of Afghan people. So U.S. Has always also shifted blame on neighboring Pakistan to hide its failures in terms of security, progress, and governance of American-backed Kabul government. So furthermore, never has any evidence established which was ever provided to Pakistan that it has an alleged involvement in training and attacks. So according to Pakistan, military intervention can never be the solution to Afghan problem. Pakistan is doing its best to improve ties with Afghanistan. There are steps which provide proof about Pakistan's initiative. For example, first, dozens of suspects have been handed over to Kabul. Secondly, behind-the-scenes strategic intel committee engagement trust deficit. And thirdly, Pakistan long abandoned Gulu-friendly Afghanistan and all it wants now is stable Afghanistan. Pakistan seeks an Afghan-led and Afghan-owned reconciliation process on democratic terms. So it takes time for such policy to deliver, given that no hegemonic foreign interference prevails in Afghanistan.
Waqas, this was a great interview that untangled the complex Afghan mess for our listeners and helped us get a grasp on the reasons behind the latest violence that's gripping the country, as well as the consequences that it could have on Afghanistan's political stability. Thanks a lot for speaking with us today. Now we're going to hear what Mr. Shahid Raza has to say. Shahid is a geopolitical analyst currently serving as the director of the geopolitical research project Command 11 Consulting in Islamabad.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Shahid, what's behind the latest spike in highly publicized attacks by the Taliban and Daesh? And how do you respond to the mainstream media speculation that the two groups are competing to outdo one another in showing Trump that they won't be deterred by his promise to win the war?
Thank you for having me again, Andrew. The first dynamic to consider here is that the attacks have mainly been focused on important buildings in Kabul. For instance, the attack in the vicinity of the headquarters of the Afghan intelligence agency, the NDS, and on the Intercontinental Hotel in Kabul are designed to send a message to the Trump administration and allied government in Kabul in a direct response to Trump's mini surge of U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Kabul was considered to be safer than other parts of Afghanistan. However, the situation has turned upside down in the past weeks as the Taliban and Daesh have ramped up attacks in the capital. Mass media is again trying to attempt and drive attention away from the real reasons why these attacks are taking place in Kabul with such increased tempo. They're trying to create a comparison between the Taliban and Daesh. I personally don't think that they are trying to outdo each other. The situation in Kabul is deteriorating very quickly, and consequently, the SIGAR, the Special Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction, has been forbidden from releasing the unclassified data on the percentage of territory occupied by the Taliban right now. So, in short, Trump administration cannot win the war in Afghanistan. Therefore, in my opinion, these attacks are a show of force of sorts by the Taliban and allied groups that they can hit them wherever they want in the capital, Kabul.
Okay, you know, you mentioned allied groups, and this brings me around to our next question, Shahid, and that's about the mysterious Haqqani network, which some U.S. and Afghan voices claim is based in Pakistan and was supposedly involved in these attacks. So, Shahid, how does this Haqqani network figure into everything that's been happening in Afghanistan, and to what extent is it being used to scapegoat Islamabad for Washington and Kabul's failure in securing the peace after 17 years of war?
Well, Andrew, just like anything, Americans need a fall guy to blame for their failures in Afghanistan. We have all gotten used to with the Americans and their Afghan allies accusing Pakistan after any major attack taking place. And I can't help but state that they are only looking for someone to blame for their own strategic blunders. In reality, though, it's been 17 years and the government of Pakistan came out with a strong condemnation of these attacks and offered support to the Afghan government. And recently, the representatives of the Afghan intelligence, they also visited Islamabad for some negotiations and talks. What Afghans and U.S. must understand is that blaming Pakistan for their own failures in Afghanistan may be an easy explanation for public consumption, but it is certainly not a solution.
Okay, well, since we're talking about solutions, then the last thing I'd like to discuss today during this interview is about your expectations for the upcoming Tashkent conference in March. In light of the unexpected explosion of violence in the country over the past 2 weeks, as well as Donald Trump wanting to dispatch approximately 1,000 more troops to Afghanistan in the coming months as well, and it also including loosened rules of engagement against militant forces. So, Shahid, what needs to first be done in order to revive the peace process and ultimately reverse Afghanistan's failed state status?
Well, Andrew, the main goal of the multilateral meeting in Tashkent is agreeing to the principles of a peaceful settlement in Afghanistan, elaborating a mechanism for negotiations between the government of Afghanistan and the armed opposition, and coordinating joint international efforts to support this peace process. And I must state here that the Tashkent process is trying to do what Pakistan has been trying to do for years without any success. You know why? Because Afghans are not free to make their own decisions. they must first consult the Americans, and if Americans reject anything, which they so often do when it comes into conflict with their own vested interests in Afghanistan, the proposal is rejected. And therefore, I have no high hopes for this conference itself. However, I do agree with the approach this conference is adopting. And in the end, the ultimate solution for trying to stabilize Afghanistan and trying to reverse its failed state status is that we need the entire world right now, and especially our own region, they need an Afghan-led and owned peace process between the government and the Taliban. Because if there is foreign intervention, for instance, the U.S. dictates a lot of these peace processes, and that's why these peace processes have failed. For instance, multiple peace processes in Pakistan, Turkey, Qatar, China, even in Russia. They haven't succeeded simply because Washington does not agree to the terms the Afghan government must, because there is absolutely no symmetry of interest between the Afghan government and the occupation forces, the American establishment as well. So if there's no symmetry of interest, then they, even the Afghans and Americans, cannot agree to each other on anything. So these peace processes, they won't do anything unless and until the Afghan government is free to make its own decisions and actually act upon on those decisions and deliver on the promises made in these peace processes.
Shahid, thanks for explaining the significance of the last attacks in Afghanistan and the strategy behind them. This enlightened us about the reasons why the U.S. is trying to bring the Haqqani network into all of this. And I also found your closing comments on the Tashkent conference to be very useful in helping us understand the real reason why peace has so far eluded Afghanistan. Thanks a lot for that.
Trendstorm.
Now, folks, if we think back on what both of our guests share with us today, we can see that both Waqas and Shahid are vehement that Pakistan had nothing to do with this, nor has it ever. To the contrary, Pakistan has been against terrorism and has been trying to stop the problems in Afghanistan through its diplomatic initiatives. But unfortunately, the U.S. has ulterior motives for its war in Afghanistan, which is contributing to a deteriorating security situation. Nonetheless, the consequences of this could be very severe for Afghanistan's political stability. And right now, this is the worst time for these attacks to happen because Kabul's government is pretty much discredited at this point. Not many people support it, let alone outside the capital. Now, in the capital, nobody knows if they're safe or not. And the fault isn't so much on those that are doing the attacking, but are those on the inside who are allowing it to happen. Afghanistan needs to clean its own house before it does anything else. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@spoonikanews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.